Thank you for listening to this podcast from Freedom Vineyard. We're a church that not only wants to see individuals transformed, but whole communities changed with the love and freedom that Jesus has for us. If you're interested in us and visiting on a Sunday, just head over to our website, freedomvineyard.org, to find out more. I hope you enjoy today's podcast. Thanks for listening.
God calls us to look forwards all the time. And is that tension in being a Christian, isn't there? Looking back and looking forwards. And as you get older, and some of us are, well, all of us are getting older, some of us are a bit older than others. And the balance between looking forwards and looking back changes a bit, doesn't it? You can start to feel you've got more to look back on and less to look forward to. But actually, for a Christian, the opposite is true. For Christians, there's always more to look forward to. There's always the best yet to come. And that's kind of what we're looking at this morning. And we're in the middle of this series, The Big Picture. And as Glenn said, the other preachers are on the podcast. And I made the mistake of listening to myself a little bit from an earlier one. And it can be quite a disturbing experience. Especially when I realise I seem to sniff all the way through the sermon. So if I do that, and I'm unaware of that, I do apologise in advance. I think last week Amanda looked at Joseph, that's right, wasn't it? And galloped her way through chapters and chapters, which is pretty impressive in half an hour. And this week is Moses, which makes sense. So we're following a logical sequence through the Old Testament. And so Amanda, if you like, took us into Egypt with Joseph, and I'm taking you out of Egypt, how many, 400 years later? Something like that, with Moses. And we're looking at the relevance of these characters to us, because they can, well, they are a long way away, aren't they? Literally, historically, geographically. And we're trying to see what is their relevance to us and how do they work with the rest of the Bible? How do they fit with the New Testament? Because it's easy to think about Jesus and the Gospels and the letters, and then the Old Testament, what is that? Well, it's the foundation, isn't it, for the rest. Without the Old Testament, we don't have the New. And that's very much the case here. If Moses hadn't led the Israelites out of Egypt, then the history of Jesus being born in Bethlehem would have looked a bit different, wouldn't it? Because they never would have reached the land. So this is very much part of the story. So Moses, well, there you go. I shouldn't have drawn attention to it, should I? He's the central character in four books of the Bible. Some people say he wrote the first five books of the Bible. There's a lack of clarity about that. I'm not clever enough to comment on that. But certainly parts of it read in the first person. It sounds like this is me talking about it. Very much, they're sort of passionate, particularly when he's talking about the people of Israel and he's grumbling, actually. It's quite interesting. There's a lot of grumbling in the Old Testament. I don't know if you ever noticed that. A lot of grumbling. And it's not something that God gets very pleased about, actually. But we haven't got time to look at that, fortunately. If you're a grumbler, we won't be covering that. So he led the Israelites out of Egypt. And he was an Old Testament picture of Jesus the Saviour. He's mentioned more in the New Testament than any other Old Testament figure. There's about 80 references to Moses in the New Testament. That's a lot, isn't it? It's about 80. Not that I've counted them. I rely on AI for that, obviously. So where do you start in half an hour? Well, so we're going to give you a title. And sometimes a title can help you sort of fix your mind. I mean, if you're not a title person, that's fine. But sometimes a title can think, well, if I can remember nothing else about the morning, I can remember Moses and watch where you're going. I think we can manage that, can't we? We'll do that. And Moses knew where he was going. Where was he going? He was leaving Egypt, and heading for the Promised Land. And I don't know what you're like when you're heading out on a journey, how prepared you are. We fall into different categories, don't we? Some people look at the map, some people set these days their whatever they do on a phone and head off. I'm more the sort of person who just assumes he knows where he's going. It doesn't always work out very well. I have been known to miss meetings. I have been known to miss interviews for jobs through not being able to find the location. Whether this is overconfidence, chaotic approach to life, I can't tell you. Often it doesn't matter, and you get away with it. And the people think, well, he never turned up. You know, we're not really missing a great deal. That's okay. However, there was a time we were staying with some friends in South Africa. Actually, they were here the last time I preached, Colin and Ronnie. And we were staying with them. And we had a car lent to us. I'm not sure it was insured for us or anything like that, but it didn't seem to matter in that context. It probably should have done with hindsight. And we set off for a journey somewhere out. We were staying in Johannesburg, and we set off for a journey somewhere out into the sticks from Johannesburg, which perhaps wasn't the wisest thing to do in the first place, with us and our three boys in the back. Alistair, who was working there, Alistair worked in Zimbabwe and South Africa for a year, and that's why we went out. That was the pretext. Getting to where we were going, and I can't remember where we were going, we got there okay, somehow, and I felt very confident about it. That's really good. It's quite easy navigating your way somewhere. Somehow, on the way back, things changed. Johannesburg is a very large city. I don't know if any of you have been to Johannesburg. It's a big place, and it's surrounded by townships, some of which you're familiar with from the news years ago. And I realized at one point I was utterly lost. Not just a little bit lost. And there's a feeling of being lost perhaps in London or lost in Leeds or something, which is very different from being lost in Johannesburg. It was not scary, but close to terrifying. Really, because not only did I not know where I was on the map, because we had a map, gentlemen, ladies, a map, but I didn't know where I was on it. Doesn't help, does it? So a map of Johannesburg, where am I? I wanted the little red dot that says, you are here. But I didn't have that. Not only that, but I didn't know where I was going. That's quite awkward, isn't it? And obviously Alistair had been walking and busing and biking around the town, so he had no idea of how to get from... So once I got over my irritation that he didn't know where he was going either, which was quite unreasonable, but obviously in a car with a family, you get a bit unreasonable sometimes, don't you? Chrissy's sense of direction is... he's okay. But we learned at one point that I should not be relying on her for navigation. We have some issues about left and right. And dyslexia, so I mean, it's unreasonable, basically, to rely on her. That didn't stop me being unreasonable always, but it doesn't, does it? So we were heading around. There's a motorway that goes around Johannesburg, which is a little bit like the M25, but much more scary. And we were heading north, I think, towards Pretoria, which is somewhere different. And as I realized that, I thought, uh-oh. Now, what would you do in a situation like that? What would the sensible thing be to do? Well, ask the way, pull off. There are options, aren't there? There are junctions on South African motorways. You can pull off. Well, what I did was I did a U-turn across the middle of the motorway. Fortunately, there are no crash barriers on South African motorways. You'll be pleased to know. And we swerved around across four or five lanes of traffic onto the other side of the motorway with some gestures and some horns blowing, etc., and settled back to a direction that I was more comfortable with. I don't think Chris was rigid, I think, at the time. It was very quiet in the car. There was very little screaming. Very little scary. I don't know if you remember that. Some of you will remember that film from many decades ago. Look it up on YouTube. He says, we're going the wrong way. How does he know which way we're going, is the answer. Well, the question for I want to put to us this morning is, do you know where you're going? Obviously, by the way, we got home, just in case you wondered, because we're here. But that's a very long story. We haven't got time. See, Moses knew where he was going. He knew where he was. He was in Egypt. God had called him out of Egypt and was sending him into the promised land. Jesus knew where he was going. And he has such a clear vision and purpose. And that's why they're often compared to each other, Moses and Jesus. In Proverbs, in the King James Version, in Proverbs 29:18, it says, without vision, the people perish. In your more modern versions, it probably says something slightly different. But basically, we need vision. We need to know where we're going to sustain us. Without a sense of purpose, without knowing where we're going, we're going to fall away. And the book of Hebrews talks about this. So we use the New Testament to help us to understand the Old. The best way to read the Old Testament is to read it through the lens of the New Testament. And this is the verse I particularly want to look at. These verses from Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11, 26 to 27. It says, Moses regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. And by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. Some interesting ideas there. So we're going to break this down. It says that he regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because Christ wasn't there, was he? Or was he? So there's some interesting things start to come in about the Trinity, aren't there? Was Jesus there? Well, actually, probably yes. But Moses didn't know that, did he? So, as we said earlier on, Moses was part of Jesus' story. If Moses hadn't led the people out of Egypt, then God would have had to find a different way, if you like. He wouldn't have stopped it, but God would have found a different way of Jesus coming as the Messiah in that geographical location. In 1 Corinthians 10, it tells us that the rock that followed the people of Israel was Christ. Again, we're back to this idea that Jesus was involved. He's not someone who suddenly appears in the New Testament from nowhere. He is God, and he was in some way there in the desert with the people of Israel. It says Moses was looking ahead. I have a lot of sympathy for certain people in the Bible who I feel are often used by preachers to illustrate things that are not very good. I don't know if any of you ever feel sympathetic for people who get picked on in the Bible. Anyone can think of some people who tend to get a bad rap from Scripture? Sorry? Thomas. Yes, we could spend the whole morning talking about Thomas. He's one of my heroes. Thomas the skeptic. Yes. Martha. See, you've got the... That's fantastic, you see. It's not just me. I'm really grateful for that. I heard a sermon series recently that completely rehabilitated Thomas and Martha, and it was absolutely fantastic. Do you know Thomas was the first person in the Bible to call Jesus God? He was a bit of a slow top, but he received that revelation before anybody else because of how slow and careful he was. He got special revelation. So if you're a bit of a slow coach, a bit of a slow, careful person like me, then there is hope because there is revelation for us. However, what about Lot's wife? That's a tricky one, isn't it? In Luke 17, Jesus said, remember Lot's wife. And unfortunately, he wasn't saying it in a good way, I don't think, if you follow the rest of the context. Unlike Moses, she wasn't looking ahead, was she? They got literally dragged out of Sodom. I mean, it's amazing. Even Lot didn't want to leave. And the angels dragged them out of the town. And he said, whatever you do, do not look back. And what did the poor old thing do? She looked back, and it didn't end well for her, did it? She was remained there, and that's why she ends up in so many sermons. And there's nothing. I feel there's very little I can do to rehabilitate her. I'd like to. I feel I would be working against God's purposes in that if I did. But I've always felt terribly sorry for Lot's wife. And there she stands as a memorial to don't look back. But you have to ask the question, don't you? Why was she looking back? And in Luke 17, Jesus tells us that whoever wants to gain his life will lose it. There was something about she was looking back to the life she had and not wanting to leave it behind. Moses wasn't doing that. He had led the life of a prince in Egypt and he left it behind. We have to believe that where we're going is better than where we are. Because if we don't, then we're not going to be motivated, aren't we? It's a bit like a a job, you've got to the end of the place that you really want to be there, but you have to keep going because you have to pay the mortgage and you know you want to be somewhere else. It's very hard to be motivated, isn't it? And when you go for a job interview, have you ever been for a job interview when you're really struggling in your current job and you desperately want another job, but it's really hard because you're in such a bad place? The best place to go when you're going for a new job is when you're doing really well, isn't it? Because you're full of confidence, you don't really mind if you get it or not. You're not really basically on your knees begging them to give you a job, which, figuratively speaking, I hope. He was looking ahead, it says, to a reward. And that's really important. We're not just doing this for the sake of it. We're not just doing it to feel good about ourselves. We're not just doing it because it's the right thing to do. There's a reward. It's worthwhile. In Corinthians, both 1 and 2, Paul says that we're working for an eternal glory that far outshines anything here. Now, I don't know what eternal glory looks like, but it's pretty good, I would imagine. It feels a reasonable description, doesn't it? And he says that we're working or we're running for a crown that will last forever. And that's got to be worth it. So there are things here that are not going to last forever. And my house I'm thinking of at the moment, there's a bit of disrepair at times. But God uses that sometimes to remind me that I'm working for something that's going to last forever. And therefore, it says he persevered. Now, I don't know about you, perseverance is not my favourite thing. I'm not the most patient person. You've heard that from the driving story. I'm a bit sort of chaotic and impatient, and I'm not sure I hate studying. I'm not sure I'm very good at persevering at all. You know, Moses was, I believe, roughly 40 years when he was kicked out of Egypt for the first time, old. He was another 40 years in the wilderness after that, in Midian, which makes him about 80 when God appeared to him. So there is hope for many of us. In fact, there's hope for pretty much all of us. God seemed very happy to call someone who was at possibly the weakest point of their life to do something incredible. Aaron was 83. I always feel, again, Aaron, someone else feel a bit sorry for, sorry. Just one of those mornings. So he was the older brother, and yet he had to sort of come along and tag along and look after, well, perhaps that's the role. He had to look after Moses. And it says that he persevered because he saw the invisible, not just because he was the persevering sort, but he saw the invisible. And in fact, it doesn't say that. It says he persevered because he saw him who was invisible. You think, well, how do you see someone who is invisible? Well, in Hebrews 11:1, I try not to sing it, it says, now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. Yes, we go. We'll make you remember this. Faith is being sure of what we hope for, certain of what we do not see. Okay? So you've got to keep that. Some of you have that in your mind already. And don't worry. There is possibly more singing to come. It's a trouble with frustrated worship leaders, you see. They can't help themselves. Once you give them a microphone. But I learned most of the scripture through song, particularly when I was younger. There's an enormous value in, I never found memorizing scripture easy, but once I had a melody in my head, I could remember whole chunks of the Bible. So 40 years in the desert, and another 40. And then just sort of round it off, he had another 40 in the desert. Back to people we feel sorry for. Do you know Moses never made it to the promised land? Well, he just got there. Just. And he said, please let me in. And God said, no. You'll have to read a bit more about that. It's very complicated. And there was something about the fact that he was the last of that generation who had rebelled against God. It's a really tough one. I found that really hard. There's a lot of the Bible I find hard. I don't know about you. I just find it very hard sometimes to read it. So Moses was hoping for a geographical location. At least he got to see it. Remember, God took him up on a mountaintop and showed him, well, look, there's the promised land, but you're not going in, chum. Everything Jesus did was about saving the world. Well, everything I do, everything we... What is it about? you know, it'd be nice to say, isn't it, everything I do is about, and I'm sure we can have some slogans. The Co-op do a survey of the most popular music used in funerals every year. In the top 10, there's one hymn. Let's see if you can guess which hymn is in the top 10. Well, there you go, Abide With Me. Now, that could be someone's favourite here, and if it is, I'm sorry. But it's a bit grim, isn't it? I don't know if you come out of a funeral feeling uplifted by Abide. Well, you probably can if there's a Welsh choir or something. Amazing Grace isn't anywhere. I Did It My Way is number 2, which is feels sad a bit. There's some absolute shoggers in there, which I suggest you look up, because I don't feel I can share them this morning, given that I don't know some of you very well. I will share one, actually, which is actually would be highly appropriate for a Christian. One of the favourite ones is Let's Get the Party Started. Actually, for a Christian, which is absolutely perfect, because that's what's about to happen. Another brilliant one is the theme from the film Local Hero by Mark Knopfler called Going Home, and which is just music on the guitar. And say, Going Home seems a brilliant, brilliant choice for a Christian to have at the funeral. But those songs actually reflect people's perspective. They reflect what they're thinking about, where they're going, which is a little bit sad. I'll tell you mine, shall I? You know, it's a song called by Brandi Carlile called I Was Made For You. And it's a song about Chris, and it's a song about God. And that would be what I would like. But there you go, just for future reference. If you're making notes, Chris. Hopefully another 40 years. So my life doesn't always look like it's got an eternal perspective. I find the here and now, she's got the notebook out, there you go. So either Going Home by Mark Knopfler or Brandi Carlile, I Was Made For You. Any other requests? No, I'm really not, I'm frankly not that fast. I'm going to be enjoying myself somewhere else. So the here and now is so much more here and now, isn't it? You know, literally our bodies, our appetites, our health, our relatives, our jobs. How can we have an eternal perspective about all that? You know, Moses didn't find it easy. Do you know what Moses' response to God was after a lot of to and froing? I think it's fantastic. You see, the Bible is clearly not a con job. Moses' response was, please send someone else. That's awesome that that's in the Bible. God has spent 2 or 3 chapters equipping him with supernatural signs and wonders and miraculous staff. He says, can't we find someone else? By the way. You know, and that feels very familiar, certainly to me. Please send someone else. When I was a child, and this will tell, I was a very strange child, one of my favourite hymns was Teach Me My God and King and All Things Thee to See. Is anyone old enough to remember? It's a Wesley song based on a George Herbert poem. You don't need to know that, but there you go. And in it, it talks about who sweeps a room as for thy sake makes drudgery divine. Again, I'm a very strange child, I accept that. But I love that. I love the alliteration of those metaphysical poets. And just the idea that the ordinary, the normal, the boring, the getting up in the middle of the night with your baby can have an element of the divine and the manifest presence of God. Because otherwise we'll end up splitting the two. We'll have the normal, the boring, the earning a living, the looking after relatives, and we'll have the eternal, the supernatural, the divine, and they'll be separate. That's not how it works. One is meant to invade the other. The eternal, the supernatural, the presence of God is meant to be part of our everyday life, so that when we sweep the floors, when we clean up the toilet, that yes, God can be present. Because otherwise, life is just about looking forward to something. But the looking forward to something has got to root us in the now. Once the writer of the Hebrews gets through the whole 11 chapter where he's got every single person who's an example of faith, he says in chapter 12, let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. He's the pioneer and he's the perfecter. He's the beginning and the end, it says in Revelation. He's the Alpha and the Omega. So in Philippians 1, it says another song, he who began a good work in you will carry it through to completion. What Jesus starts, he will complete. And Jesus has started something in you, he started something in me, and he's promised he'll finish it. That's his promise. So wherever we are, he will finish it in a good way with us. And that's our calling, to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus and finish the race. Don't lose heart. It's worth it. Because you aren't running on your own. You're running with the people here. And actually, Jesus is running alongside you. And in Hebrews 11, it tells us that we have a great cloud of witnesses cheering us on. You know, God is not disappointed with you when you need him. Do you ever feel? I mean, we can be very disappointed in ourselves, can't we? I know I am frequently. And because of weakness and because of needing, but actually God is never disappointed when you come to him and say, I need you. I mean, as a parent, we're not, are we? If our child comes and says, I need you, Daddy. We're not like, oh, get lost. And God is the perfect father. He's the perfect father. He's not disappointed that we need him. You know, the best way to be aware of the eternal is to encounter him in the word and in worship. And we've done that this morning. We've worshipped, we've encountered God, we've done that through reading his word, encountering, because the word is alive and active. So we're going to have a time to respond to that. We're going to have perhaps a little bit more worship and a bit of ministry. Glenn was talking about one or two things earlier on for people. And okay, I just want to leave you with that question. Do you know where you are going? And if you're not sure this morning, then we'd love to pray with you. And it may be that you're not clear at all, or it may be just in this season of your life you lack clarity. And it would be great to pray with you for that.